that the, in preparation for a criminal case, the preparation is probably is going to be more extensive in that case. And I guess, and I don't see what's wrong with that. If you're trying to do justice, if a lot is at stake, then it's going to cost, it will cost more. But if the goal is to really try to award someone who's been given award to someone who has really been hurt badly, I guess I don't know. I don't see why we want to stop the jury from doing that.
All right. Let me just, I understand what you're talking about. The wisdom of the jury system is something that I generally believe in. But I would say that historically, we don't operate in a vacuum in these things, and we have had reasonable limitations on people's right to recover by statute in Oregon forever. For example, an action against a public entity. And I did some work for a major public entity a year ago who called me up in July and said, will you now represent us because we don't have insurance? But they have a limitation basically of $100,000 per person or $300,000. So they have a limitation. Now, does it make any sense that somebody, when they get run over by the city of Salem, can recover $100,000, but if they get run over by someone else, can recover $100 million? This, the reasonable, a reasonable level, and I'm not suggesting what that ought to be right now, but what I'm saying is that when we say that we don't think punitive damages is a useful part of the compensatory system, what we're saying is there is a background for taking a look at the system and making the type of changes to make it, attempt to make it responsive and still just and fair to the people that are injured.
One more, Mr. Chairman, then I'll be done.
If I may just briefly respond, Senator Hill, to your concern. I think we lawyers forget that the basis for punitive damages arose under English common law. Under English common law, there was no ability to recover for pain and suffering. And that's why the concept of punitive damages was developed, to allow injured people to recover for pain and suffering. That's not the current American system, nor has it been for hundreds of years. A jury may award for lost income, past and future. A jury may award for pain, past and future. A jury may award for suffering, past and future, for loss of income, both past and future. So all of the actual damages that a plaintiff incurs, that an injured party incurs, a jury can compensate for. Now you add on to that a claim, and we're talking here about a claim in a complaint for punitive damages, which, as we readily acknowledge, I think, very seldom a jury will allow punitive damages. But when you have that claim, that can be used as blackmail to force a settlement for more than just compensation on the other legitimate claim.
Okay, and I'm going to go back to Senator Hill in just a minute, but I want to just interject before Senator Hill's question. If that's the concern, and if that's the argument, it seems to me that you could put a prayer in for $1 million in general damages in a $1,000 case, and it'd have the same result. You're not asking to put any limitation or abolish general damages. Senator Hill?
Thank you. I guess to move away from the practice of law for a minute, I guess, do you not believe that there's some conduct, and it happens extremely rarely, as you've said, that is so heinous that you would not want to punish the wrongdoer? Now, and it seldom happens, and I guess, are you saying that there is no conduct that could be committed by a plaintiff that is so heinous that there should not be punitive damages?
No, and the legislature has spelled those situations out. Securities fraud violations, Unlawful Trade Practices Act cases, discrimination cases, those by statute permit recovery of punitive damages. And when the legislature decides that a particular act or a class of acts is heinous enough to justify punitive damages, then the legislature should put those on the books as laws, as opposed to having this general concept of punitive damages, which we have seen used in practically every lawsuit that's filed nowadays. Just reading from Mike Royko's column about the two clerks in Senator Brockman is familiar with that case. One clerk sued the other because he was passing gas next to him, and he asked for punitive damages. This was filed in Multnomah County Circuit Court.
But see, the thing is that, and there are people accused of doing all kinds of things, and we were allowing our jury system to differentiate between those. And I guess I don't understand why we would. We cannot, as by statute, list everything. And in those situations, certain types of cases we can list. But in personal injury situations where any infinite number of conditions and circumstances can occur, you can't list all those things out. It would be impossible to do it statutorily.
If the purpose of our justice system in the civil side is to compensate injured parties, fully compensate them, then punitive damages does not fit into that scheme. The only reason for punitive damages, as recognized by the Oregon courts, is punishment and deterrence. And punishment is a criminal concept.
Okay, let me interject here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I wanted to find out first if you were through, Senator.
Yes, I am through. Thank you very much.
I think we all understand, and even the non-lawyer members of this committee understand, that punitive damages aren't compensatory damages, but punitive damages are a part of the system. Now, if you want to change the system, you're going to have to explain to us how taking a piece out of it is going to make some difference in terms of the problem that we're here to resolve. That's the first thing that I want done before this committee. And we're wasting our time if we're going to argue about the philosophy of punitive damages, because the Oregon Supreme Court has time and time and time again had an opportunity in Oregon to abolish the doctrine of punitive damages, and has chosen in case after case after case to say that these circumstances are so aggravated that punitive damages were properly awarded by a jury. So I don't think we should get into the philosophy of punitive damages. At least I'm looking at it that way. I think the committee members want witnesses to zero in on how these proposed changes are going to make some difference in the availability and cost of insurance in Oregon.
Two ways.
Wait a minute, now hold the phone there.
All right.
And just to kind of set this thing in an actual factual setting, just the other day I got a renewal notice on my homeowner's insurance. I had $100,000 coverage, and State Farm said, if you want to pay $15 more, we'll raise your coverage to $300,000. That's how little it cost me to triple my coverage. And I assume that that's the same in other property and casualty insurance lines. You know, the amount to increase your coverage is relatively small. I don't know why everybody doesn't carry $100,000 at least in insurance. But so The insurance company's exposure on a claim is not reflected in the increase in the premium.
If I may address that, two ways that abolishment or severe limitation of punitive damages will go a long way towards reducing the two problems that I see. One is the cost of insurance, and I do not represent casualty insurance companies, so I don't have a vested interest in sitting here before you on that point. Reducing casualty insurance premiums, number one, and number two, helping relieve the litigation explosion that we're seeing across the country and in Oregon in particular, because we have three full-time law schools pumping out lawyers at the rate of 400, 500 a year. I think the litigation explosion is the more serious concern that this committee and the tort reform package should address. Restriction on punitive damages will reduce insurance premiums, because when Senator Cohen's personal lawyer, who's representing her on the $1 million punitive damage claim, calls John Holmes and forces him to settle or face the risk of the insurance company being sued for wrongful refusal to settle, they're going to settle, and their premiums are going to go up correspondingly.
Okay.
And number two, if I may finish, Senator, number two, by restricting or eliminating punitive damages, you're going to eliminate a substantial portion of the lawsuits, and I'm not saying all plaintiffs' lawyers. There is a huge body of young lawyers out there whose sole right to walk into a courtroom or file a complaint is that they have a diploma from a law school. And in my view, that's not sufficient to use what has become an extraordinarily powerful weapon in American society, which is the filing of a civil lawsuit, a complaint. I'm sorry.
You know it doesn't just take a diploma.
And passing the Oregon State Bar. Excuse me. And what else? Liability insurance. Key point. Forgot, Senator. Right. I sit as a pro tem judge in Multnomah County about three times a year, listening to summary judgment motions, and I see complaints. I've tried cases in Oregon, Washington, and California. I've seen thousands of complaints. Many of them have attached as a matter of course to them a claim for punitive damages. And they're very difficult to get knocked out at the pretrial stage. And so they have become an extraordinarily powerful weapon in forcing settlements of otherwise unmeritorious lawsuits or forcing settlements at cost that more than compensate the plaintiffs. And it's become a windfall for plaintiffs and plaintiffs' lawyers because punitive damages do not compensate. They're not intended to compensate. They're an extra.
Okay.
They're a bonus.
We understand the purpose of punitive damages without any question. And I would say that, again, it's going to be of great help to the other committee members who didn't sit through 9 months of hearing and listen to witnesses and read the documents and so forth that I did, if you people would come here with some hard facts. And one thing that the task force did not conclude, that there was a litigation explosion in Oregon. If you've got some evidence to the contrary, why, bring it in. That is not one of the concerns, I recall, of the task force.
Has Justice Peterson testified before this committee or the interim
task
force?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, as long as you've mentioned Judge Peterson, let me tell you that his testimony was that in 17 years as a member of your organization defending insurance claims as an insurance defense lawyer, and in 8 years on the Supreme Court, his own opinion was that Oregon juries were neither giving excessive awards nor were they runaway in any sense of the word. That's his opinion based on that experience.
Don't disagree with that a bit.
That's what we're interested in. I want to know what is happening in the state of Oregon. What is happening in the Multnomah County Circuit Court? What is happening in the courts of this state? And what can we, and if there's a problem in the Oregon system, what we can do to correct it.
I've cited to you the 84 study of the Multnomah County Circuit Court where cases in which punitive damages were claimed seemed to be settling more than other cases.
I'd like to have.
I'll send it to you.
If you
I'll
would, please.
Sure.
Okay.
I am aware of no comprehensive studies, and I'm not sure they can be done, as to the settlement, the effect by punitive damages upon settlements in Oregon. That would be very difficult to do.
That would be pretty speculative, I have to agree.
Exactly.
But it would help if you could get that kind of material to us. I do know, and I think, is Scott Gallen still in the room? I see him back there. Unless something has happened since I raised this question in the task force, according to Mr. Gallant, there has never been an award of punitive damages in Oregon's history against a physician for professional negligence.
I don't think that's the point. The point is they're being punitive damage claims are being used as blackmail for settlement.
That's what I want to have documented. I never heard that during the task force's hearing.
Senator.
No one ever said that.
Senator Wires.
Go ahead, Senator Wires.
Well, the idea of blackmail is that at some point or another, if people are using it, it's got to work in order for it to be useful. And the idea that Mr. Holmes would advise the insurance company to settle the case because a lawyer who was using unethical tactics, which blackmail would be, when he in his evaluation of the case, knowing as he's testified that it, that punitive damages are rarely awarded, would be demeaning his own practice of the law, and I'm sure he wouldn't do it. Tell somebody to go ahead and settle because somebody was making a spurious claim that they were going to, false claim they were going to be able to get punitive damages. He might if he thought there was some reasonable probability. And that's what lawyers are always talking with their clients about, is what are the probabilities here? He might urge it. If punitive damages are cases are settling more often or for more money, it might be because there may be some rational relation between them being claimed and there being a major problem there, like somebody hurting somebody in a situation where the plaintiff's lawyer was confident they'd be able to prove intoxication. That kind of a case is apt to get more money out of a jury, whether it's in punitive damages or in general damages. So I just think, as a person who files a good number of plaintiff's cases, that most of the time, unless the case is really aggravated, you're inviting an awful lot of extra work for yourself as a plaintiff's lawyer to bring a punitive damages claim, unless you've got a very good case when you could probably recover, and this is one thing I think I do agree with you partly about, you could probably recover as much under the compensatory damages and not risk being reversed on appeal or having your punitive damages taken away. And if they're taken away, your client doesn't get any money and you don't get a percentage of that. So it seems to me that I didn't quite catch the name of the man on the right, but it seems to me that you're a little excited.
Mr. Richter.
Richter.
It's an emotional subject. I apologize for getting excited.
I noticed that.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to say that I didn't come here as a statistician, and some of these things that I can't give you statistics on, I am trying to give the committee my honest experience as to where I see additional time that is spent that is necessarily spent. And I've been involved in cases with Chief Justice Peterson, and I also can remember when we had a statutory lid on death penalties when rates were lower and so forth. And I can remember as we've gone along that we've fiddled with a limit of this and a limit of that statutorily. So I don't think it's strange or different that we would come to you in this situation and say that we think, it's my experience and that of Mr. Richter and of our organization, that punitive damages, the only reason I'm only talking about this one area, Senator, is that's what you have on today, 2 through 5, is part of the picture that is the expense of tort litigation in Oregon. And I would recommend this to you, whether it would have a nickel's worth of effect on premiums, because I think the system is more just geared to compensation rather than geared to punishment.
Well, as I say, I don't know if we should get bogged down in the philosophy of the thing. I mean, I think we want hard information. Senator Cohen?
Well, I know, Mr. Chairman, that this is a little bit off, but I, for my own understanding, I'd like for you to share a little bit about, so that I can better understand the case that was just brought, punitive damages awarded in the federal courts with the insurance company, and it was a case in Oregon that brought. And so that if we eliminate punitive damages in Oregon, and I know your answer will say, well, we've taken out some of the percentage of the cases that are sort of routinely thrown in there as punitive damages, but we still haven't. You still, in terms of the cost of insurance, you always have that threat of bringing it in federal court in some way or another. So could you explain a little bit about the relationship of the kind of cases that might go into federal court and a little bit about that award that took place a couple of weeks ago?
I'm not familiar with the case a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if Mr. Richter is to respond to it. But
insurance case, the insurance company...
It was the case against Farmers Insurance Companies, the $1.8 million award.
Yes, I'm familiar with
Judge
that case.
Baloney.
Yes, our office represented Farmers in that case. As a matter of fact, after the activities alleged that were the basis for punitive damages, so I know a little bit about that case. Number one, the legal basis for claims in federal and state courts are different.
Yeah, so except that we always hear that's a reason why the local jurisdictions, even though we've got all these caps, they thought, well, my goodness, it's likely we have to insure because they're going to find a way to bring you under civil rights or some way into the federal courts. And I guess I need to know a little more. That's another blackmail piece that the lawyers tend to, and the insurance companies tend to foist off on all the people who have caps existing to say, oh, but goodness sakes, you ought to reinsure over here because you might be, they might bring it in federal courts. So again, I need to know a little bit about how that works, and I know the bases are different, but you're talking about philosophical kinds of things here, I guess, and I want to just have you explain a little more how that works.
Well, there are only certain kinds of claims, as you know, that can be brought in federal court. They have to be based upon federal jurisdiction. And there are remedies, including punitive damages, available in federal court, although they're much less likely to be used as blackmail as used in state courts, because the federal courts have a process whereby those kinds of claims can be eliminated.
Let's look at that. Okay.
Much better. I think if that answers your question.
That's helpful, because you give me an idea I want to follow up on.
So both the basis for the claims and the procedure, I think, make it less likely to use punitive damages for the kinds of in federal court for the kinds of purposes you're seeing in state court.
Two other points, Mr. Chairman.
Second, please. Senator.
Well, no, I'm going to ask you, I'd like you to give us what that procedure is, and I want to look seriously at what those procedures are and how we might. So I need to know what those procedures are, either now or later, or get them to our council.
Sure, something. Be happy to.
You were talking about the $15 for the extra premium to go to $300,000 on your homeowners, and I would grant you that I've seen some homeowners when you could do that, but I don't know if you looked at the experience of Oregon lawyers attempting to insure their excess this last year around with 750% increases, because it isn't my experience that it's analogous, and I had thought that you had suggested that it was analogous, the cost of insurance on excess to liability claims. But that's one point. The other point, Senator, is when you were talking about the wisdom of the Oregon court with regard to punitive damages, if this committee, if this legislature elects to stay with punitive damages, which they may well do, you may want to consider the wisdom of should it be statutorily mandated, because it seems to me that 2 through 5 go through that exercise. Was that the intent? I don't understand. Did the task force intent to have statutorily mandated punitive damages as to somehow help the liability insurance crisis?
Well, again, we're probably spending more time on this one small section of this huge bill than it really deserves, except of all of the suggestions and all of the positions taken by the coalition and how we can beat this problem. The one that struck me as having the least relationship to the cost of liability insurance was the existence of punitive damages. That's why I'm pursuing this thing. I'm still looking for why that's going to make, philosophically, we could discuss this forever,
right.
It doesn't seem to me, from what I've heard, that it's going to make a nickel's worth of difference in the cost to the Oregon consumer whether we abolish the doctrine of punitive damages in Oregon or not.
Why is it in the bill, then, is my question, I guess.
Well, because there happened to be a majority of the members of the task force that felt that some change should be made. And the change that I think everybody agreed upon was that if insurance companies were prohibited from including punitive damages in their coverage, that it made sense to all of us on the task force that this certainly should reduce costs. We just tell insurance companies, you can't do this, you can't provide this kind of insurance, and it seemed to us it would reduce the cost. So that was unanimously decided upon. The rest of it was kind of split among the members. Okay. Do you have anything else to add to your testimony?
Nothing other that's not in the written materials.
Okay. Thanks very much. And probably we'll see you later on in connection with other parts of the bill.
Right.
Okay. Jim Gardner, you're here on the same... Oh, by the way, Mr. Richter, I do have... you intended to leave this with me now, this Multnomah County? We'll mail it back to you. I do want to make a copy of this study for the committee members because I don't think it helps make the case that you presented at all. Yeah, we can make you a copy right now. Go ahead, make the copies. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Gardner. I'm an attorney with the Lindsay Hart firm, and I'm here today representing the Pharmaceutical Manufacturers Association, which is a trade association that's composed of the major drug manufacturers in the United States. I'm going to be very brief. We're a member of the SEALS Coalition and in support of their position, but I want to focus on a narrower issue which we'd like you to consider in the event you don't adopt that broader proposal that they have advanced. And this I would characterize, I believe correctly, as essentially a codification of the existing common law rules as to an aspect of punitive damages. We're going to present you with an amendment which would basically say if a product has gone through a government approval process and unless the producer of that product has presented false testimony to the government agency or withheld relevant information from that agency, that product ought to be immune from punitive damage liability with respect to those aspects of it which were approved by the government agency. In other words, and that I believe is in fact the outcome that you would get under the common law rule. Now what this does is essentially give a bright line test that would enable a party to take that claim out at the summary judgment stage. The rationale is really independent of the concern about liability insurance rates, because these are typically not insured items, but it is not independent of the concern of reducing product costs. I believe that one component of the escalating drug expense that we have we've seen down in the Ways and Means Committee, and we've had there have been some very serious concerns about that in terms of the impact on the Medicaid budget and some of the other budgets. One aspect of that is the essentially self-insurance premium that's reserved, at least that may be being reserved for claims of this sort. I think that we'd have a good shot at perhaps bringing some of those cost increases into a more moderate spectrum if we could get not only in Oregon, because Oregon's obviously a tiny part of the national market, but in a majority of states, a bright line test essentially for punitive damages.
Okay, I think I understand.
It will have some language for you.
Yeah, all right, fine. Now let me ask you this: since you're talking about products liability cases,
you're
aware, of course, that there are some product liability cases where punitive damages are asked for and are awarded by jurors because manufacturers, in the face of evidence of the potential harm and where we do in fact know that manufacturers have done outrageous things. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are those cases.
Yes, indeed.
You're not suggesting that we abolish the punitive damages across the board in all product liability cases, are you?
I think a result that the PMA would be in support of. That is not what I'm talking about now, though. What I'm talking about is when it has gone through a governmental approval process and when there's no evidence of either false statements or withheld information, that that ought to be a bar.
I'm kind of taking advantage of your connection with the products liability field to find out whether you feel there are any of these product liability cases that we know about where there has been willful misconduct by the manufacturer, whether you would favor the idea that in no event could punitive damage
be awarded. Well, the proposal that I'm talking about would not have that effect.
Yeah, I understand
that.
I'm asking you about what you think on this proposal that we've got.
Well, you know, as I said, I think that the my client's position is that they're in favor of the flat ban on punitive damages. I think that if this committee and the legislature in its judgment decides that that's not a good idea, there are narrower approaches that can be taken.
Your proposal, it seems to me what your proposal will do is say, look, we acted in good faith and the government itself approved
precisely
the product, and so therefore we don't really fit within the definition of willful and wanton conduct
precisely
for which punitive damages should lie.
But it gives a bright line test to that so that there's a so that there, you know, frankly, it's a way of...